From WGCU, this is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. It's called Bias on the Bench, a year-long investigative reporting project by the Herald Tribune in Sarasota, which found huge disparities in how Florida sentences its criminals. Reporters found the punishments meted out by Florida's mostly white, mostly male judges are heavily influenced by a judge's personal prejudices on race, politics, and gender. We talk with two of the reporters who worked on the project and a retired judge still active in Florida's legal scene who spent a career overseeing some of these cases. And it's still possible to enjoy parts of vintage Florida if you know where to look. Old hotels, haunted hideaways, retro buildings, even dive bars and nudist colonies carry a bit of history. And a new book will serve as your guide through classic South and Central Florida. We'll speak with the author of Discovering Old Florida about what parts of Florida's past we can still see today. First, the news. Welcome back. You're listening to Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. Possibly one of the last frontiers of America's East Coast, South and Central Florida have a history that's recent enough to still be somewhat unspoiled. You can still find dive bars that Ernest Hemingway hung out at, utopian villages from the mid-1800s, and you can visit a store where frontier justice played out, ending in one man's murder and no charges being pressed. In her book, Discovering Old Florida, writer and educator Erica J. Waters gives us a concise guide with miniature history lessons for anyone wanting to learn about our part of the state. She joins us now in the studio to talk about her book and about Florida. Erica, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
We're talking about with the writer of a most unique travel guide called Discovering Old Florida. If you have a story from Southwest Florida's past that you'd like to share, give us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. And on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. Erica Waters, this is more than a travel guide. It seems like while you covered all the bases with hotels, restaurants, historic sites, you were able to interject some very interesting tidbits from history. Tell me a little about this book and why you arranged it the way that you did.
Well, it's a guide in the sense that I'm recommending places to go and to visit. But I also have a longstanding interest in history, so I wanted to put some details that I thought people wouldn't know about and to talk more about some interesting people in Florida history. And along the way, I discovered some fascinating stories. I started a blog on my website called Adventures in Vintage Land just for that purpose, so I could talk more about that. So, but the question always comes up, you know, what do you do in a guide if there's nothing left, like archaeological sites and things like that? So I had questions about what to include and what to omit.
Yeah. Well, what made you want to write the book as a whole?
Well, I felt that Florida had a reputation for being really mostly beaches and fishing. And I know there's a lot more. I like, you know, kayaking and things like that and sailing and beaches too. But I also felt that there was a lot of history that wasn't being – that isn't known about, and I wanted to stress that too. I think historic preservation is very important. I think we have a great history here, and I'd like to see it emphasized more.
I think it's a great idea.
Thanks.
You're from the complete opposite climate up in Maine, correct?
Well, actually, I lived most of my life in St. Croix in the Virgin Islands.
Yeah, then you were in the Virgin Islands. Now you live part of the year here in Naples?
I do, yes.
So having written about Maine and the Virgin Islands, how does South and Central Florida stack up?
Ha.
I'm just curious. I mean, it's kind of hard to compare and contrast and pick a favorite child, but how – you were saying there's so much here.
Yeah, I like – the history is very interesting. I'm actually very impressed with the history. When I started getting into it and I'm realizing all the downtowns that still exist here. And, you know, in Florida, you go off a main highway and you're in a town that really is from another century. I couldn't believe what I was discovering in some cases. And I think it's probably more historic in some ways than the places we think of as history. I mean, look at Marco Island. With the Calusa cat, the Calusa cat is a 5-inch wooden statue that they know is from the Calusa times 1,000 years ago, at least. They're having trouble dating it exactly.
It's at the Smithsonian right now.
Yes.
And they're working on bringing it down for a visit.
I heard that. I hope they do.
I know. They're still in the application process. So
Okay. If
they do, we'll certainly be letting everybody know. Discovering Old Florida was chosen as one of the 12 best holiday books by AuthenticFlorida.com. Congratulations on that. Authenticity is a much sought-after concept these days. Do you find that history and looking back gives a truer sense of the authentic Florida rather than shiny strip malls?
Well, yes, I do. I think that of course, authentic is a subjective word, you know, but I certainly – I mean, I think that is true. I think when I got into the middle of the state and discovered that there's a Western community, I mean, people think of themselves as cowboys and have rodeos. And I thought, well, that's something that's not very commonly known. And that's certainly authentic in a whole different sort of way.
As fun as the history is, you also managed to keep things practical with tips like traffic delays, particularly on Sandcap Road. Thank you for that information because it does get backed up there. Were there requirements that hotels and restaurants and other structures had to meet in order to be included in the book? As far as age, they have to be so old or
– age. Well, yes, it was age mostly. But I visited a lot of places and I ate in a lot of places. Of course, I never said who I was or what I was doing. But I also read a lot of reviews and sort of did a consensus of opinion. I had a lot of friends who went out places and told me what they thought should be in the book.
We're talking with the author of Discovering Old Florida, which is more than just a guidebook. It gives a historical perspective along the road trip. Do you have a slice of Florida history that you'd like to share? Give us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK on Facebook. We're at WGCU Public Media. And on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. One of my favorite things about this book is the little areas that are highlighted in gray. Those are little in-depth stories of personalities from history within Florida. Which are the ones that are most notable to you from your research?
Well, you know, I think it might be worth mentioning because we're coming up to 2017 that 100 years ago in a little town in Moorhaven, they elected the first woman mayor in the South. And Marion Newhall – her name was Marion Newhall Horowitz O'Brien, and she went down there with her husband in 1917, and she became part of a whole community. She was the bank president, and she started a farmers' collective, and she did a lot of amazing things, and she was voted the mayor.
She was pretty progressive, too, from what I read.
Yes.
And she was hiring during segregation, she was hiring African Americans.
Yeah, she got in a lot of trouble. The story is that someone tried to kill her.
Yeah.
A bullet grazed her head. And so she left. But she went down there she was a widow. She went down there with a young son and with her new husband, who seems like he's right out of a Hemingway novel.
Mm-hmm.
He was looking for excitement and adventure. And so they had a very interesting life down there.
This was kind of the place to go for excitement and adventure. So you had a lot of people to pick from for personalities to profile.
I know. And I mean, I don't know if you saw on my website that very sexy man known as Trapper Nelson.
That guy. Tell me about Trapper.
Trapper was from New Jersey, and he was 6'4", and he weighed 240 pounds, and he was like Tarzan. He was like right out of Central Casting, you know, if you want somebody. And he never wore shirts, of course, because he was very muscular, and rarely he wore shoes. And so he ended up in Hobe Sound area in Florida, and he would have alligator shows started a zoo eventually. He was apparently very popular with the ladies, especially heiresses, and he would get their acreage and their land and finally, somehow, the government got involved and said that his zoo, which he had started, was unsanitary. And he really thought they were after him. And, you know, in retrospect, it almost looks like they were after him. But they closed him down for sanitary conditions. And he was very upset about that and eventually stopped picking up his mail. He wasn't a hermit, by the way. He had a lot of friends. He would go into this local fish camp and apparently order entire pies to eat, not a slice, a pie. And but in the end, he got increasingly worried about people, and he made everyone write him postcards before he would see anybody. And then he shot himself, supposedly. A lot of people have questioned this. They said, how could he shoot himself quite like that if he really wanted to kill himself?
Mm-hmm.
But he died, and they ruled it that it was a suicide. But the questions are still, you know, swirling around this today.
Yeah, well, if the man, if you will, was after him with his zoo and stuff, and he felt so paranoid that he would make people send him postcards before they'd come to visit. that, so he went from being kind of like a jungle gigolo with all the heiresses and getting all this stuff,
right.
and walking around looking like Tarzan, and then he ended up, that's kind of a yeah. sad demise for such a character.
I know.
The murder at Smallwood store is also a pretty intriguing one. Can you tell me more about that one?
Yes. Well, Edgar Watson was he moved to our part of Florida from the West, and rumors were circulating even when he moved here that he had killed people elsewhere. He bragged apparently that he had gotten away with it because he played the role of the quote, you know, a good standing citizen, and so people left him alone. So he moved to Chokoloskee area and started farming, and then people started complaining. The people who worked for him were complaining that they weren't getting paid. And so a group of men in town tried to do something about it. They contacted the sheriff, but the sheriff didn't want to get involved. You know, that's very interesting, too, why he didn't want to get involved. So the local men decided to take it into their own hands, and they confronted him at the Ted Smallwood store and eventually killed him. They did kill him. I don't know, a battle or whatever happened.
And no charges.
Again, no charges.
Wow.
Yeah.
The Ted Smallwood store is pretty important, too.
Oh, I love it there. It's really interesting.
You know, for people that don't, you know about the Ted Smallwood store, can you tell me a little bit about it?
Well, it's on stilts, probably because of the, you know, the water. But it's supposed to be haunted down below, by the way. I don't know if that's well
known. Oh, really?
Yes. And you can go right in there, and it's been left just the way Ted Smallwood left it, apparently in the 40s. He was a postman, and he traded with the Indians, and he traded with other pioneer settlers. And he would take the mail to Marco Island and other places, and he had a thriving business. And so apparently you could go in there now, and they have like models of Edgar Watson that you can see, and all the supplies that he was selling are still there, and they'll give you a tour. His granddaughter runs it now.
That is, it's great that it's still there.
I agree.
Because talk about an outpost.
It really was an outpost.
I went there years ago. It's still an outpost. It's way out there. And I went there years ago, and the main thing that haunted me was the mosquitoes. And that is where I learned that mosquitoes like shade. So just cook in the sun, and the mosquitoes won't bug you as much. That was a learning experience there. But it could be Edgar Watson.
Yeah.
That could be the haunter underneath there. Who knows?
I know.
I bet there's so much story that we don't even know, too.
I know. And, you know, I tried to find out a lot because I love to do research. But there's just a limit to what you can find out. It's not written about. People aren't talking,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Well, the statute of limitations is up. So if you have any stories, please share. we're talking with the author of Discovering Old Florida, which is more than a guidebook. It gives a historical perspective along your road trip. If you have any stories that you'd like to share from historical Florida, give us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK on Facebook. We're at WGCU Public Media. And on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. Are there any stories that you found along the way that you weren't able to include in your book? Anything just too controversial or too out there? Oh, I'm sure. Please just
talk
about the radio.
No. But, you know, I was interested in the way history sort of is written up. I mean, I don't know if you know about the Murakami Museum, which was it's outside of Del Rey, and it's in a very populated area. Del Rey Beach is very populated. And then you sort of go off on the side road, and you're in this oasis of a Japanese garden. And it came about because in about 1900, this is how it's written, an NYU graduate from the business college decided to import Japanese labor for people to grow pineapples, to work in the fields. And he called it the Yamato Colony. It sounds to me like indentured servitude because they had to get paid. You know, they would use their money then and pay back all what they were getting from the man who was running it. And they never
was the guy that was running it also Japanese, though?
No.
No?
Oh, I think he was. Yes, he was. Yes.
I feel like he was. I feel
yeah.
like it.
No, you're right.
Maybe his name just sounded like it. I'm not sure. But it sounded like he was.
He was. And it didn't work. So the people went back to Japan, except for George Murakami, who decided to stay. And he farmed the land. In the end, on his death, he left the land to this city, and with the decision made that it had to become a garden. And so it's a beautiful Japanese garden, several different Japanese gardens.
It's, I love Japanese gardens too. Mm. They're so – they just make you breathe deep and feel peaceful. Now, I have passed the Punta Rasa sign 1,000 times.
I thought you might bring that up.
On the way over to Sanibel, I found it was so interesting that it was a completely different space. Now it's covered in condos and a boat slip.
Absolutely.
Well, a very busy boat slip.
That's the example that I debated – that I was thinking about before when I said I debated what to put in a book. There's nothing to see. But we know that was historically very, very important place. They used to ship cattle from there with Jacob Summerlin, the king of the cowboys, and he had a house there. That was where there was a Western Union, a precursor to Western Union, where they first heard the news that the Maine had been sunk. So it's very historic, and there's nothing there. I couldn't even find a plaque. Somebody said there was a plaque there.
I heard it was called Punta Rasa, and that's all I ever knew. And then I'm reading along, and then you're just kind of riding along, and it's Jake Summerlin, the king of the Cracker Cowboys, had a home there. And I'm sitting there thinking, oh, Summerlin Road. Maybe that's
absolutely
what it's named after. I mean, making those little connections is so fun. And then that's followed with the story of how Captiva got its name.
Yeah. And that's
a hearsay.
Legend.
But it's a great legend. The legend is the pirate named Jose Gaspar buried his treasure there and kept women captive on the island. That is quite the legend. And then you think about Gaspar and you're going, Gasparilla. Right. I wonder if that's connected. So we're surrounded with all this history and we just have no idea. Is there something that you think is really overlooked that is just not getting the consideration that it needs as far as like this area and in its historical context?
Well, I love Pine Island. People go to Mat Lache, and Mat Lache is wonderful and it's very lively and full of tourists, you know. But if you go a little further, you end up in Pine Island, which is like another world, really. You can eat mangoes, they have wonderful tropical fruit stands. And then you go to the end and you're on Boquila, which seems to me so remote. You don't even feel like you're in Florida at all. I don't know where, it's really quite remarkable. That's another haunted place right at the end there.
Really?
Supposed to be.
Do they know who? Do they have any ideas?
Yeah, they were very happy to discuss it with me.
Really? But you don't want to spread the rumors? All right. Oh, the stories I wish you could tell. John is on the phone from Inglewood, and he has a story for us. Tell us, John.
Yes, thank you. So 2 Labor Days ago, my friend and I from Arizona that are avid kayakers, we kayaked the Mayaca River from the state park and kayaked all the way down to Snook Haven, which both of those rivers have some history, or that river and place has history with the Mayaca River being designated as one of the 2 wild and scenic rivers in the state of Florida. And then Snook Haven has history as being an old outpost there on the river back in the day.
Well, that sounds pretty interesting.
That is. I think are you talking about like fish camps? Because that's an interesting thing people don't know about too much.
That's probably another thing that's fun to go investigate too. I have a question. We're going into Christmas break, and if people haven't made travel plans, can you give us some ideas of some one-tank trips people might want to take?
Well, I think first of all, people should go to Edison and Ford Winter Estates because that's really wonderful at Christmas time. And what about Pine Island? I said, I love Florida Southern College. I don't know if people know about that. I think that's a one-tank trip from here. Frank Lloyd Wright was approached by the dean of this college. And the dean didn't know him, and I don't know where he got the nerve to do it, but he asked Frank Lloyd Wright, who was the most famous architect at this time, would he like to take over and design an entire college? And Wright thought that was a wonderful idea, and he came down to Florida Southern College, which is in Lakeland area, and he agreed to – and they built it. I mean, they built this wonderful – it's like you're walking into all the magazine articles you've ever seen and photos of Frank Lloyd Wright's architecture, and there it is.
Like Dwell Magazine of 1960.
Exactly.
That would be great. Right. Last but not least, we're kind of running out of time, but I wanted to ask you real quick to let us know where to get this book.
Good. Thank you.
That would help.
Yeah.
We talk about how great it is.
Well, it's. I have a website called vintagetraveling.com. It's available on Amazon, but it's also available at some outlets in Ford and Edison Winter Estates, the paper merchant – that's in Fort Myers. Of course, the paper merchant in Naples, on Marco Island at Sunshine Books, in Sanibel at McIntosh Books, and at the Sanibel Historical Museum and Village.
And the name of the book is Discovering Old Florida by Erica Waters. We'll have to leave it there today. I'd like to thank you for coming in today, Erica Waters. It was great talking with you. Her book is Discovering Old Florida, out now. Great book and a good way to give a gift of Florida without sending coconut patties. And it's far less perishable. Not that there's anything wrong with coconut patties. Our show today was produced by Matthew Smith and directed by Richard Chin Kui, with technical help from A.J. Leonard. Our social media coordinator is Tara Callaghan. Gulf Coast Live is made possible through the generous support of the Elizabeth B. McGraw Foundation. Tomorrow on Gulf Coast Live, did you know that you may be living in a blue zone? It's a movement to make Southwest Florida healthier, happier, and more long-lived. We'll find out what the blue zone hype is all about and what research is based on, as well as how businesses are getting involved in creating healthier work environments. Plus, eating local just became more accessible where meat is concerned. A local farm is now able to process locally raised animals thanks to a new certification. We'll talk to the farmer about how this will relieve hours of transportation for area farmers. We'll also chat with a chef about the benefits of eating locally sourced food and learn what's in season right now. For now, thanks for joining us. I'm Julie Glenn. This is WGCU-FM, Fort Myers, 90.1, WMKO Marco Island, 91.7 FM, NPR, for Southwest Florida.